Hello and welcome to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog. It can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com. And I just wanted to record this brief message before the second part of the interview. Now, if you did not listen to the first part of this interview with Derek Ashong, I released it yesterday, so please head on back, listen to the first part of the interview. I recorded it all in one 60-minute conversation, which I split into two. For those who don't know who Derek is, he's a YouTube superstar. Go to YouTube and look for Derek Ashong, D-E-R-R-I-C-K. Ashong is A-S-H-O-N-G. And watch his video where he talks about Barack Obama. He has two videos about that. He's a speaker. He's an Afropolitan who has lived in Saudi Arabia, lived in the States. He's a musician. He's a speaker. And I think one of the coolest things about talking to Derek was that Derek made me feel very, very small. Like, here he is, this guy in his early 30s, and he's achieved so much with his life. And he really inspired me and made me feel like, you know, I should be doing more so that when I'm in my early 30s, I can be where he is right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please make sure you listen to the first part of the interview. Check out their Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/soulfege, which is S-O-U-L-F-E-G-E. And today their album comes out. Today, Take Back the Mic by Soulfege comes out. Go to iTunes right now, even before you listen to this interview. Buy the album. And at the end of this podcast, I have a little sample of the album. So head on over to iTunes, buy the album, come back to the site, leave me a review. Enjoy Derek. So that folks can get inspired, talk about some of the stuff that you're doing, you know, to help, back in Accra as well.
So I started something a few years ago when I was in grad school called Sweet Mother. And basically, Sweet Mother Tour, SMT we called it, was a way that I, as an artist, as a musician, could connect with other musicians back home, and then we could start amplifying our collective voices. So what we did is we started in the summer of 2003 with just making some music. I took a team of musicians that I was working with in my band Soulfege out to Accra, and we worked with one of the top producers in the country, a guy named Panji Anoff, who's the founder of the Pigeon Rhythm Collective and is one of the pioneering producers in the hip life movement. And we basically just produced a record. We came back home, we worked on it some more, finished it up. We went back the following year, and I brought a team. First, I took 6. The next year, I took 20. Wow. And we stayed at this place called the Kokrobite Institute, which I've been working with they basically do programs teaching young people about like African arts and culture, kids from Africa, from Europe, and from the United States. And I've been doing some work with them, and we came and we stayed there, and we worked with some of these kids, and we shot a music video that was fusing high life with dancehall and hip hop and really giving a diasporic sound to it. But we shot it on the streets of Accra. Meanwhile, we took a documentary crew and we started shooting all these little clips of what young people there felt was the influence of Western culture and hip hop culture on their lives. We took that video, we came back to the US, we edited it, and we released it in Accra. And we formed this little network of young people that were going to promote these ideas and images that represent Africa as we see ourselves, not starving and hungry and hopeless, but as powerful and beautiful and hopeful. And we released the video, not in the West. We released it in Ghana. And the first month we came out, the video charted number 4 in the country after R. Kelly, Usher, Beyonce, then our band, Soulfege. And everyone was like, what the? How did you do? What? You know what I'm saying? We got peoples, you know what I mean? Next thing you know, we're airing in South Africa, in Mnet, on Mnet. Then we're airing in Jamaica, RETV, TVJ. Then we get picked up by Channel O. Then the BBC World Service is covering us. Next thing you know, we're on MTV Africa. And in the space of about 4 months, we're airing in over 50 different countries. And this is with no record label, no PR company, no management company, just us. And I'm still in grad school. And how did we do it? We did it by leveraging the resources that were available to us, a network of young Africans who wanted to see themselves. And when I say Africans, in this instance, I mean of the whole diaspora, Caribbean, Latin American, African American, you know, East African, West African, South African, who just wanted to see themselves represented beautifully and with honor. And they put the word out and people latched onto it. And so that SMT we built further, and we held a conference called Youth in the New Pan-African Renaissance, Rebuilding Africa for the 21st Century. We held it at Harvard University, and we had people come in from across the United States, as far as California and Hawaii. We had people come from Kenya and Rwanda. We had people come from Ghana and Jamaica and the UK. And we sat down and we broke down, hey, what are ways in which we can collaborate and make a difference for our community? And I mean, to this day, I'm working with people that we met through that conference. One of the gentlemen, I was on a call with him last night, who's in D.C., about some projects that we can do together. A number of us won fellowships to TED last year and are now part of the development of this African TED community. And so I've really, and with the exception, I didn't go last year, but pretty much every year I go home and I either do a recording project or something that will put money into the community back home and will take some of the culture out to be marketable in the West. We are releasing a record on July 15th that features one of the top MCs in Ghana, the founder of the Hip Life movement, and his name is Reggie Rockstone. It also features a Grammy-winning artist named Bounty Killer from Jamaica. And, you know, through our artistry, we're exposing the world to an Afropolitan sound and image. And then through our activism, we're engaging other Africans in dialogue about how do we build upon our existing resources and create more for ourselves and for our homeland.
Wow. So how did your band get together? How did Soul Fed get started?
Well, all of the core members, the three of us that really founded it are myself, Jonathan Gramling, and Kelly Nicole. And, you know, basically, John and I were in college together, and we sang in a choir called the Kumba Singers. And when we graduated, we were like, you know, we've had a wonderful time. We sang in the choir. We sang in an a cappella group within it. And we believed that we could, you know, do music professionally. At the same time, there's this lovely girl named Kelly who was in college at the time after we had left. And so she was in that same choir. And, you know, we all got invited as part of the choir, both this undergraduates and some of the key alumni, about 20 of us, were invited to sing with Bobby McFerrin at this big concert in Germany, and 20,000 people, and it was so gorgeous. And we did that, and then we subsequently got invited to play with him at City Hall. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's like this big concert hall in Boston, and it was wonderful and so exciting. And a few of us were looking at our professional music and how we were developing. We're saying, you know, we really want to do something together. And so Jonathan, myself, and Kelly, along with a couple of other friends, some of whom are no longer working with us, but we also acquired some new people as we went. We started a band. We called it Soulfish. And we wanted to make music that could make us feel good, that was hot, it was funky, had grooving beats, but it was also intelligent. It was not disrespectful. It was something that, you know, my mother could hear and not be embarrassed. Something that I could play when I go back home to Africa, and it would make people feel good about themselves and not like, oh, this boy has gone and gotten lost. Something that would move beyond thugs and hoes, but that would still have love and respect for hip-hop culture. And that is the creation of what we call Afro-Diasporic Groovalicious Funkadociousness. This is effectively our sound. More simply put, Afropolitan fusion. It's like if Bob Marley were kicking it with the Fugees on a street corner in West Africa. That's Soulfish. And wow. And that's how the band was born.
So how many records have you put out so far?
We put out one record that under our name a couple of years ago. That was received a lot of critical acclaim, but we didn't know a lot about how to sell it to a global audience. And so we actually wound up getting a ton of media attention out of it, though. I mean, at this point, virtually every major media outlet in Boston, ABC News, the Boston Herald, the Boston Globe, NPR, they've all covered us at some point. And then I was recruited by a very famous producer called Dave Stewart, who is best known as half of the Eurythmics, Dave Stewart, 90 Lennox. He's the guy who wrote like Sweet Dreams Are Made of This and all of that. He recruited me out here based on some of the writing I did in grad school and how we were using those theories to promote ourselves worldwide. He asked me to join his company and help to build some models for launching some new next generation media companies. And we did that, and I learned a lot and had a wonderful time. And then I left in February to really drill down on this new record because Soulfesh got signed to a wonderful label started by some senior guys in the recording industry, one multi-platinum producer, another guy who was a senior executive at one of the major labels. And that's where we built this new record, and it comes out in July. So there are two records that we've got. First one was called Heavy Structured Plus, which is available on iTunes. And then the next one is called Take Back the Mic, and that will be debuting on iTunes 2 weeks from today, July 15th.
And what's the music industry been like? I mean, especially now that the whole gangster hip-hop thing is big, 50 Cent is the definition of what the industry should be. As in, how is the industry reacting to you?
Well, if you know, it's funny because the industry as we all knew it is dead. And we saw it coming a while ago, which is why we never wanted to sign with a record deal, a record label, until now. And the deal that we signed is with an independent label that is started by very experienced guys, but that enables us to control much of our sound, our destiny, and our business strategy. And the reason we did is because, you know, what the labels were effectively doing is they were selling salacious content just to try to get by and to make a profit. So, you know, what's the easiest thing to do? Well, we got these black kids, and they are like arbiters of cool, and we can market in that small demographic, that limited population, and find out what works, and then we can take it and expand it to a broader community in, across the United States, and that's where we really make our money. Now, the problem is when they're looking at a black kid coming up in that community and they want to sell it really to a white kid in the suburbs who's maybe never come to the hood, they're like, what is this image that's going to sell? What's going to be working for me? Well, what's the easiest thing to translate? Sex and violence. So rather than getting authentic stories of what is really going on in these communities and what the people really struggle with and deal with, you're getting stories that are fabricated, but that you market as authentic, so that a kid who is growing up in, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, or Boise, Idaho, who's never been to the hood, is going to think, oh, well, that's real, and is going to buy it because that's their window into someone else's life. Now, here's the thing. That worked for a while, but it's starting to crumble because people are starting to realize that it's all these false images. 50 Cent don't live that way. 50 Cent may have been on some gangster stuff back in the day, but now he lives in Chicago. Why? I'm sorry, in Connecticut. Because why? Because he's not trying to catch a 10th bullet. And that's smart for him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you were making millions of dollars, would you be sitting up in the same community where they shot you 9 times? Not if you have half a brain. So 50 is doing his thing. Well, what we found is this trend where people are starting to realize that it's all kind of a fallacy has worked really great for us, because in a world that is in desperate times of change and of real struggle, people want something they can believe in, and they want something new, and they want something honest. And so when we go out to market our music, those same kids in Minnesota and Iowa and Wyoming are the ones buying our music because they see that it's really real. And so as much as the industry would initially look at us and like, you guys are too confused. Are you a hip-hop band or a reggae band? But you play live instruments. What are you, a rock band? Black people can't do that. you know, which is all ridiculous because black people have been doing it, right?
Yeah.
But when we go to an audience, you never have an audience leaving a Soulfesh concert being like, oh, my God, I can't believe they can play so much music so well. They're coming out like, wow, I loved it. And it's been working to our advantage.
And what was the story behind? How did the record that you're putting out now, how did that get started?
Well, it started because I wanted to do something that was going to flow a little more in the hip-hop direction, because it's something I grew up really profoundly with, but that was going to be speaking to issues that we think are important and in a way that's intelligent. So we started building this record that would really challenge some of the orthodoxy and say, you know what, I'm not going to be defined by a media that has no idea what I'm really all about. I mean, the reason why you and I met is partially because you saw that video that was online about that YouTube interview. And the guy comes up to me with certain assumptions. And I don't think that he was malicious in his intent, but his delivery could lead one to believe that he wasn't really expecting me to know what was going on. Why? Because I'm there, I'm wearing a black jacket, I got a hoodie, I'm wearing my baseball cap and some jeans. And like, looking like Casual Kid. Well, people assume that Casual Kid, hip-hop style-y, is not going to be that intellectual. And it's a false assumption. It's like when I was saying earlier, I came back to this country and I didn't know that black people are not supposed to be smart. So in my ignorance, I'm running around getting good grades and like showing people up. And in that instance, that's exactly what happened. It came where someone perhaps made an assumption about my relative preparedness. And in my response, they found that, wait a minute, this kid is really smart and he knows what he's talking about. Well, what happens in our music is we bring it. The beats are hot. The stuff is funky. If you come to our show, you're going to leave sweating. And you can tell from the photos of our concerts, like, people are rocking out. But if you listen to what we're saying, there's a lot more to it. You know, and it's not always got to be about the guns and the girls and the drama. There's a song we wrote called From the Soul that is on the upcoming record. And there's a line in that I have in it that says, our prince was meant for this. The seventh son of a king, I was born with wings. Some men are defined by their diamond rings, but my blood runs with gold. I don't need the bling. And a line like that is just making a statement of how do we see ourselves? And the lyricism is strong, and the delivery is strong as well, and the beat is grooving. So when it comes to the chorus, it says, rhyme from the soul, I say. Light up the mic like it's judgment day. Yeo, shine like a solar flame. Burn out their eyes till they see you sing a wail and live it like you love it. Yea, for we who believe, no go die this way. Yea, we riding for our souls today. We warrior, we no go play. No way. And that is a statement, once again, of how we see ourselves. And, you know, there's another song on the record called To Be Free, and it says, what would you give to be free? Free to stand astride the morning sun and sing your own melody. And find your own way. Right? It's not a record that is political per se, but it is a record that is definitely making a statement that we are taking back the mic, that we are representing ourselves, that we believe we've got the intellect and we've got the pride of self to make a statement and to take a stand that this is who we are and we will not be diminished by anyone.
And so is the record just on iTunes?
It will be on iTunes starting the 15th, and then in the fall it will be released in Best Buy stores across the United States. But what we're initially doing is we're promoting heavily to that Afropolitan community worldwide, which is why we're doing the digital release. iTunes is the most well-known of the digital outlets, but it'll be on Amazon, and it's going to be on BestBuy.com and a bunch of different outlets where you'll be able to buy it online first.
All right. And how else can people support you and support the music?
Well, I would say, for one thing, everyone should join our Facebook group. If you guys are on Facebook, because there's a lot of things that are happening that way. And one of the things we're having is a campaign right now whereby if you go to facebook.com/soulfege, soulfege is S-O-U-L-F-E-G-E, you can sign up as a fan of the band and we'll be in touch. But what we're doing right now is we're asking all our friends, and we're saying, okay, look, you guys, we're going to get people to commit to buying the record on the 15th. And that's one thing. We would like everyone to go out and buy the record because our dollars vote for what we believe in. If the music is a commercial success, you're going to find all kinds of other African bands and bands that are making music that makes our communities look good getting support to have a bigger platform. So one, we ask that you pay for the music. Two, we ask that you that you post on your Facebook profile or your MySpace profile or on your blog a link on the 15th that says, I just bought this music. I think this is great. I want you to support it as well. And that you get four of your friends to do the same thing. So simple. One, you buy the music. Two, you post it to your own site or Facebook account or what have you. Three, you get four of your friends to also buy the music and also post it to their Facebook or MySpace or their blog. If we do just that, we're going to reach a massive audience at the moment that we launch and debut. That energy and momentum can be used to grow and grow and move so much further. And I mean, we're blessed. I had a report in the New York Times a few months ago. Vanity Fair just wrote a review about the band a couple weeks ago. We had this great thing on ABC News in Boston also a few months ago. Next month, Current TV is dropping a profile on us. September, BETJ is doing another profile on us. So the band is on its way. It's happening. But we want to have the support of our peers to really make it substantive and tangible. And those three things are the things we ask. Buy the music, post it to your site, get four of your friends to buy the music and post it to their site as well. If you do that, we are on our way.
All right. And finally, of course, it must be asked about the Obama videos. So what is the story behind the Obama videos?
I mean, in a nutshell, I went to an the rally that was being held outside of the Democratic debate. And I was there with a friend of mine, and I was carrying my cool sign, happily enjoying the carnival of democracy. And this guy came up to me and started asking me some really tough questions. And I at first was giving kind of like, you know, a standard response, because, you know, most people ask you questions, they don't want to know what what the real answer is. Somebody come up to you, hey man, how you doing? Oh my God, yo, my feet are killing me, dude. I mean, yeah. I've been doing this workout every morning at like 5:30 in the morning, and I don't know if my shoes are right because my bunions, my quads, like, they're killing me, you know? I mean, that's how I'm doing right now. I'm a little bit hungry. Well, I'm probably going to get some breakfast. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
People say, how you doing? They want you to say, yo, I'm good. What's up with you? Yo, I'm chilling. All right, word, yo, I'm going to see you later, kid. All right, bet, peace. That's what they want. So the guy's asking me questions. I'm giving him the standard response because I know he doesn't care what I really think. And then I discover that he does, because he starts pressing the issue, and he starts being more assertive and somewhat aggressive in trying to get into what do you really, really think and why do you think it. And then I was like, oh, well, this is wonderful. This is an opportunity. This is somebody who cares about democracy, and he wants to talk about it with me. Okay. And that's how we got into the deeper dialogue. And I think for any viewers that were watching and were thinking, oh, my God, this young black kid has been ambushed. He's going to be made to look stupid on camera. That's definitely not what happened. And I think it helped to show people that, you know, this generation is intellectual. We are smart. We know what's going on. We're not just following around a rock star politician. There are substantive reasons why we support Barack Obama, why I personally support Barack Obama. And I would like to see him as the next president of our nation and a leader in the world. And that our generation, once again, needs to stop being defined by people who do not understand our true value. No society can develop without an understanding of its own worth. And I believe that that video was maybe a small part of showing the worth of our youth.
So why do you support Barack Obama beyond the rock star and the charisma?
I think that what Obama is talking about is a way of approaching politics in Washington, D.C., that can better enable you to move beyond party lines and look at what is at the core interest of the nation. It's moving beyond ideological politics, right? So what happens right now is you've got people who are on the left or on the right who have certain basic common tropes that define what makes you a Democrat or what makes you a Republican. Yes, Obama is a liberal, and I love that about him. I love the fact that he wants to represent people. I also love the fact that he's talking about fiscal responsibility. I love the fact that he's talking about methods for paying for his healthcare program. I love the fact that he's talking about removing our troops from Iraq, but actually being engaged with in dialogue with countries that we perceive currently as enemies to see if we can move them into positions where we can be collaborators as opposed to in conflict with one another. I love the fact that he's not willing to take the military option off of the table, because when we're negotiating, we're looking to negotiate for peace, but we're keeping all our options open to make sure that we can do what we've got to do for the sake and security of our nation. I love the fact that he's reaching out to national security experts who may not necessarily come from his own political leanings, but who have expertise in how we can make sure that we make decisions that are to our interest, whether it's in how we deal with prisoners in Guantanamo and shutting that thing down, whether it's how we deal with our conversations with nations like Iran, whether it's how we maintain our support for Israel while still finding ways to pursue peace in that region, because there will be no peace in the Middle East until the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is resolved. And I love the fact that he's keeping his eye on the prize with domestic issues. How can we incentivize college graduates to donate their time and work and fight for service of their communities? And in return, we're going to write off some of your debt. We're going to make sure that your education is paid for. You know, ways to get people to feel invested in their own success, to empower them. That is the bottom line for me. I don't want to hear anybody jumping up here with all of this rhetoric about, oh, well, we want to be powerful and we're the strongest country in the world and we're going to do whatever we think is right for us, and then go out there and make stupid decisions that work against the national interests of the country, that diminish us in the eyes of the global community, and that make us less safe and secure. You know, and the country went along because we were afraid. Too many people were too scared. I think that Obama represents a chance for America to stand up and show her courage to try something new, her courage to believe in herself, her courage to not be ruled by fear, but to stand with a vision of optimism and of hope that is what the nation was founded upon, for America to put the promise of her great nation into practice. That is what I see in Senator Obama. And, you know, when it comes to the policy issues, I'm a musician, but I'm versed enough in what some of these stances are that I'm happy to get into them in detail. But even without getting into them in detail, I would say to the public that we really have an opportunity in this election to make genuine history by looking inside the American soul and finding the best of it and representing that. Beyond race, beyond class, beyond culture, but towards our collective advancement and the advancement of the entire world. No candidate has best articulated a stance for doing that in foreign policy, energy independence, education, and healthcare as Senator Obama, and that's why I support him.
Okay. As a final question, today I got like this email from a friend of mine. He's back in Kenya, and you know, he's saying, I'm thinking of coming to the States and I'm very scared and I don't know what's going to happen. Like, what words of advice would you give, since you've been in the States for a hell of a long time now? What should this kid do to prepare himself for coming over to Brooklyn?
I think that if he's coming over first, he should have a network of people that he already knows here who can help him get acclimated and set up when he goes. People he can stay with who will introduce him and show him around the ropes. I think he needs to start reading the New York Times daily, online, about what is actually going on the ground in the United States. A lot of African immigrants come here wearing rose-colored glasses because we believe that America is our hope for redemption and for opportunity, etc. And in many ways, it is the hope for opportunity. It's a place where great things can happen. But it's also a hard place, and it's challenging. And, I mean, the fact that most Americans don't know that 50% of black men in New York City are unemployed, any black man that's trying to come to New York City from outside should be aware of this. Know it. Know thyself, my son. And try your best to get as much information about what's really going on as you possibly can, and then take all your hopes and dreams and pack them into your bag and come and bring all your energy to this country, because you can be a massive contributor, but really think about how you're going to take some of what you get back home.
Cool. Well, I think, almost exactly on the hour.
All right.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you very much.
Mwangi, it's a pleasure, my brother. And definitely let me know how people respond. And if folks want to reach us again, they can find us at soulfege.com, S-O-U-L-F-E-G-E. And from there, you can link to us on Facebook, MySpace. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too, man. Thank you.
No problem. Cheers.
Cheers. Hello, everyone. This is Mwangi here. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I hope you enjoyed the first part as well. One final time, www.facebook.com/soulfege. These are Afropolitans, African immigrants, one of our own, so please let's support them, join their group. Head on over to iTunes, buy their new album, Take Back the Mic. Come back to the Displaced African, leave me a review, let me know what you think of the album. And before I go, do not forget, this is The Displaced African, the African immigrant's personal development blog, which can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.
What would you give to be free? Oh, whoa. Free to stand and stride the morning sun and sing your own melody. Oh, whoa. And shout it from the mountaintops. What would you give to be free? Oh, whoa. Free to stand and stride the morning sun and sing your own melody. Oh, whoa. And find your own way. My mama told me to stand upright and to give thanks when the morning comes. My papa taught me the will to fight, but he forgot to teach me when to run. And though my path was not always right.